for those who know every line, and for those finding Star Wars for the very first time, welcome to Growing Up Skywalker.
Welcome to Growing Up Skywalker. I'm Sam.
Hi, I'm Anna.
And today we're back into Season 2 of Rebels with Episodes 3 and 4, The Lost Commanders and Relics of the Old Republic.
Oh, we're hanging out with our favorite geezers.
So we start off just hot on the heels of the Siege of Lothal. The Ghost crew is limping along in the Phoenix cell with just a few blockade runners and some A-wings left, losing so much at the end of last episode just to Darth Vader being angry.
Yeah, they lost their command ship. They lost their confidential coordinates where they all hung out in the middle of the galaxy.
So they're looking for a base. And Ahsoka says, I know some guys. You need to go talk to them, you Ghost crew. Make sure to trust them. Here's a tactical droid head. Good
Here's
luck.
Here's the dismembered head of a Clone Wars era tactical droid.
And so they follow it to the desert-baked planet of, was it Sela? Sela? Uh-huh. And there they find an AT-TE walker that is painted and covered in gantries, and it's just walking along.
It's very Howl's Moving Castle.
Yes, exactly. And out of it pops three old geezers.
Grandpa Rex, Grandpa Wolf, and crazy Uncle Gregor.
So after an initial very fraught moment, because Wolf is like, it's the Jedi, they're here for revenge. And Kanan's like, it's the clones, they're insane. And they shoot at each other a little bit. And they're like, wait, hold up. Sorry about the weapons malfunction. Let's talk.
They're all ancient. They're all roommates. It is the best. I'm gonna scream.
They're also a little screwball. So Zeb is, the Ghost crew is out there, and they've convinced Rex to give them some coordinates to some bases, but they're not, the clones aren't going to come with the Ghost crew. And so while this is all ensuing, we get to the fun action of this first episode, which is that Gregor convinces Zeb to put on a harness and go walk in front of the tank, acting as bait for Big Bongo the Jupa, which is a sandworm.
Okay, so he doesn't know he's bait, first of all. I guess Gregor knew he was bait, Gregor and all of the clones knew he was bait. Importantly, the Spectres did not know he was bait.
Like, what's he doing out there? Oh, you know, these Jupas, they love the taste of Lasad.
So the sand boils up, and then Zeb goes down the gullet of a Jupa, and the cognitive dissonance in this episode is maddening, because there's this whimsical, delightful circus theme playing as Zeb is literally inside of a sandworm being thrashed around on the end of a laser line.
Yeah, it's great.
It's wild.
So we get to see some really awesome teamwork from the whole team, because importantly, Hera and Chopper are in orbit because Chopper apparently accidentally blew up the ship. So when they arrive in orbit around this planet, the ship just explodes into bolts and fire. And so they're repairing it. The rest of the crew is down there and they're hunting this Jupa. Sabine is on the gun / reel trying to make sure that like the flux capacitors don't explode. And Kanan and Ezra are sitting there with shock prods shocking the line to try to get the Jupa to come back up. And Kanan is super unhappy with every single part of this situation, but the clones are just so darn charming that everything's okay. Like Zeb, once they eventually, obviously, defeat Big Bongo the Jupa.
Get their Jupa jerky.
Zeb, like, crawls out of it. He's like, I was inside. And Gregor's like, head to toe. That was disgusting. You did great.
They, like, high five. They are two peas in a pod. They are so delightful together.
Gregor and Zeb turn out to actually just share a brain between them.
Just one brain cell that they just bounce back and forth.
However, after this delightful Big Bongo Jupa hunt, the tone shifts because an Imperial probe droid has landed and has been watching them this entire time. And when they go in to make calls, because now, like, oh yeah, we caught Big Bongo, why don't you go inside and download the data? Yeah, it'll be fun. Sabine goes inside and she says, first of all, your call log says that you declined a whole bunch of calls from Ahsoka, which is the reason we're here. And secondly, somebody called the Empire and informed on us. And they're like, oh no. And Wolf turns away and says, I'm sorry. I thought that we needed to protect our squad, our brothers. And the clones have this interesting moment that very much calls back to the Clone Wars. Is they're like, it's okay, it's fine. And the Rebels are like,
it's literally not okay. It's literally not fine.
This is not fine. But so they're about ready to take off. The probe droid flies out, attacks everyone, shoots the Phantom, takes out its engines because it's parked on top of this walker. And then it's running away as Rex pulls out his old blaster and shoots it at about 300 yards, iron sight.
Snipes it, one shot, iconic, incredible. We bow down to Captain Rex.
And so they realize that they've still got it. They're still together. The clones are like really much more happy-go-lucky than the Rebels crew. However, the Empire has been informed that something is wrong and they're going to have to deal with that.
Well, yeah, and the Phantom took a hit to the engine, so they can't go anywhere until Sabine can fix it. They're stranded. The Empire is on its way.
So that leads us right into the next episode, Relics of the Old Republic.
Yeah, so pretty immediately, the Empire shows up, as they are wont to do. Mm-hmm. As Sabine and Hera are both working on their respective repairs to the Spectre's various forms of transportation, a Star Destroyer pops out of hyperspace right in front of the Ghost. And Agent Kallus himself calls Wolf down on the planet of Seelos, and he's like, okay, old-timer, tell me where the Jedi are. And Rex grabs the mic and he's like, listen, we came here to sling Jupas and kill stormtroopers, and we already killed a Jupa today, so hit us with your best shot.
Kallus says, I have a probe droid recording of known rebels. And Rex is like, if it's a fight you want, I hope you brought a better class of soldier than those stormtroopers.
Parentheses derogatory.
And Kallus says, they served the Empire well, and I have a great deal of them. And Rex says, you're going to need all of them. And then hangs up.
So the Empire flies a TIE fighter right down to our crew. And Rex is like, Gregor, would you like the shot?
Because these rebels are wasting ammo missing.
And Gregor pot shots it out of the sky with one slug. Still got it.
Yeah.
Rex then decides that this is all great, but he likes to fight battles on his own terms. So they turn their tank on legs and they decide to walk right into the sandstorm brewing behind them so that no one's scopes will work and everybody will be blind.
Because importantly, instead of slagging the whole planet from orbit, Kallus orders a ground invasion and drops off three AT-AT four-legged massive walkers that are way off in the distance. And now we have a outrageous walker fight going on.
It is deeply threatening. It is also really slow, which is really fun.
It starts off as like two people in like on like unicycles having like a jousting match, and then it turns into, or like old people on walkers like marching towards each other, and then they go into the sandstorm and it becomes a submarine movie.
Yeah, there is a hair-raising, beautiful scene. So everyone is blind. They're walking through this sandstorm. Kanan from the inside of the clone ship is guiding them through the storm blind. He's using the Force. He's pinpointing where the walkers are above them, and he's dodging their tank between the walkers' ankles. And then he finally positions them so that they're surrounded by all three.
And this was Rex's plan all along, because Rex is like, we'll go into the sandstorm and no one can see anything. And they're like, that sounds terrible. He's like, well, no one can see anything, but a Jedi can. And I've got two, and I know how to persecute a warp when I have Jedi available.
So there is one weak spot on the AT-ATs. It is the neck bone. And Rex tells Ezra that he has one single shot to snap the neck bone or else they're all dead. So he cannot miss. Ezra walks out into the storm on the roof of their ship. He sits down at the gunner and he's like, I can't see anything. I can't do it. I don't know how to do this. And then he remembers Kanan telling him to trust in the Force. The Force can see what he can't. So Ezra takes off his helmet, closes his eyes. The Force theme plays. He trusts in himself, and he aims the gun. It is a perfect, beautiful shot straight to the wishbone. The walker goes down, and Commander Wolf hightails it out of there.
So they make it out of the storm, and everyone's very happy, being chased by two AT-ATs.
And Sabine manages to finish the repairs on the Phantom while being targeted by walkers, which is incredible. So the Spectres are ready to go whenever, but Ezra doesn't want to leave without Rex, and definitely he doesn't want to leave them in the line of fire as the Empire is chasing them.
And Kallus is under the assumption that he still has a Star Destroyer in orbit to catch the Phantom in case they escape. However, Constantine up in orbit is like, we're receiving a call directly from Lord Vader. We need to go pick someone up in a shuttle. He's like, I better go do that then.
We are indeed going to ruin the mission down on Seelos, but can't say no to Darth Vader. Mm-hmm. So they pop out of hyperspace. Hera is suddenly free to do whatever she wants. And down on Seelos, Rex is like, Ezra, you're not leaving us. We're covering your escape. We are soldiers. This is what we were born to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go ape shiz.
They turn and fight.
Full speed ahead, they charge on the remaining walkers. They're trying to ram them in the legs. Wolf is literally in the cockpit howling.
It just says howls as he like puts it into 17th gear and pulls this thing forward, just crab crawling forward. It's shot to pieces.
Rex is just aiming for the neck for all he's worth. But they're attacking two AT-ATs head on. They're taking body shot after body shot. Their little house on legs is wrecked.
On fire.
They're at a 45 degree angle trying to climb up the walker that they're trying to take down. And then Rex's gun fails. Like the power stalls out. And he climbs out on top of his house and shakes his fist at the Empire. And the stormtroopers aim their cannon right at his face.
And he closes his eyes ready to die.
And then Ezra, with the Spectres in the Phantom, leaving them to die, is like, Kanan, what are you going to tell Ahsoka? And Kanan is like, oh my God, you're right. I can't tell Ahsoka I let her friend die. So he finally musters a singular shred of empathy and says, fine. And they whip the Phantom around. They come zooming in. They drop a human cannon of Ezra, Kanan, and Zeb on top of the walker that's shooting at the clones. They lightsaber laser their way into the cockpit and take out the pilots.
And Rex is like, just like the old days. The Rebels theme is playing. Zeb is clomping heads together. And now they're controlling one AT-AT. Rex and the clones are climbing up the other one. And this AT-AT, the Rebels one, just shoots the other one to pieces.
Yeah. And then Rex climbs back into his gunner. Gregor gets the power back on. And Rex aims and fires a perfect kill shot on the final walker. Everything is down. Agent Kallus gets on a speeder and runs for his life.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the three clones grab each other and hug it out. And they're like, this is what always happens when we have a Jedi as our general.
Yeah.
And all three in perfect unison salute General Kanan Jarrus, who led them to victory. Meanwhile, Hera is clear to roll up in the Phantom, because the Star Destroyer has been called away. Importantly, even though it wasn't Darth Vader himself who was trying to rendezvous with the Star Destroyer, he has assigned a new Inquisitor to the case who has this extremely, my name is Inigo Montoya, you killed my father, prepare to die kind of vibe about him. And he is going to hunt down the rebels. So we close the arc on the rebels, the Spectres, all rejoining Ahsoka's crew. They have the intel that Rex gave them with a bunch of secret hidey holes all around the galaxy. And then as they all form up, the Spectres step aside and they reveal that Captain Rex has come back.
Mm-hmm.
And Ahsoka flings her arms around him, big hug, and she says, thank you for trusting my friend. And Kanan says, it wasn't easy. And Ahsoka says, you know what? Nothing worth doing ever is. So the crew is back and better than ever.
Back and better than ever. Speaking of the Rebels theme song, did you notice it was different on these episodes?
No.
Yeah.
What's different?
Just the little stinger. It's a little bit darker. It's almost like it's played a little backwards or something. It's different.
Oh, spoopy.
Yeah. So let's take stock of where everyone is. Kallus is in the wastes of Seelos with one AT-AT pilot on the back of his speeder bike because the other one just ran after and did not have a speeder bike. Gregor and Wolf did not join.
Yeah. Question marks about them. I guess they're fixing their tank and continuing to walk around Seelos.
Or they're acquiring a new tank.
And probably butchering that Jupa, yeah. Big bongo that they hunted.
It's around
down
here somewhere, because apparently it'll feed him for a year. So and then we've got this Inquisitor showing up, and this is possibly a reveal to you. That Inquisitor, this is not the first time we've met them. That is the fifth brother.
Oh, the mean one from Kenobi?
It is.
Ooh, he looks bulkier.
Yeah, yeah. They definitely... So this fifth brother is 7 feet tall, linebacker-sized, like just huge.
Soft Spanish accent.
And the one in Kenobi is actually kind of slight.
Yeah, kind of weebly.
So,
yeah. Remind me what happens in Kenobi. So the Grand Inquisitor, we thought Reva killed him. Then he comes back.
And then there's like a power play between Reva and the fifth brother.
But then in the Rebel season one finale, Kanan actually has the Grand Inquisitor at lightsaber point, and the Grand Inquisitor Sudoku's himself.
Yeah.
He chooses to fall down into the big incinerator fire.
Yes.
What happened to Reva?
Reva staggered off into the wastes of Tatooine alive.
Okay, so she's still around.
And those are the only Inquisitors we saw damaged, even.
But the fifth brother was not formally named Grand Inquisitor.
No.
So we don't think he got a promotion. He just got a reassignment.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then apparently, if he's still fifth brother and not Grand Inquisitor, then he's just still an Inquisitor. Quite a few years later, like 10 years later.
Oh, that's a long time to go without a promotion.
It is, but as we talked about at length in Kenobi, like, what is your promotion path once you're an Inquisitor, you know? Like, that is why Reva is like, I'm going to kill my boss because I deserve a promotion. And Darth Vader's like, yeah, I mean, do whatever you want. I literally don't care.
It works for the Sith. Who am I to say no?
But the next job up is mine, and I will take you apart in front of yourself. So, good luck.
So that is where we're at. I guess my question is, what do you think the strategic importance is of Rex rejoining the Rebels? Also, why do you think he dipped in the first place?
Okay, two really good questions.
Maybe we should take those back to front. Why do you think Ahsoka and Rex got separated, and why did Rex not keep going with his network of clone defectors?
Yeah, because he was in a deeper network of clone defectors than even the Bad Batch.
He was in full rebel mode.
And then Echo went and joined him.
Oh my God, where's Echo?
Where's Echo?
Where's Echo, though? How old is the Bad Batch now? I have so many. This episode has unleashed the jar of Jupas for me.
Do you keep them in jars? These are 40-foot-long sand monsters.
It's a pretty big jar.
Okay. Okay, so we've got together Gregor and Wolf and Rex. They are old men.
Mm-hmm.
They have, like, that beefy old man energy and, like, the beefy old man perfect vision, and I can still shoot the wings off a fly at 300 yards.
It's so funny to look back at the Clone Wars and how chiseled they all were. Those cheekbones could cut cheese.
And now they all have, like, they all have jowls.
They've all, like, calcified in their looks. I mean, Wolf looks like a straight-up rifle-toting Republican grandpa with mutton chops.
Oh, his mutton chops are, they slay. They're great. They're amazing.
Are they?
Yes.
Do they?
Yeah. Gregor always has been, like, shorter and rangier. He holds his arms really wide.
Mm-hmm.
And he's wearing a t-shirt from the diner he worked at in the D-Squad arc.
Oh, my God, on Abafar.
Because we saw him there. He got blown the heck up. And then we saw him when he was real weird and crazy with the Bad Batch when they rescued him and brought him to Rex.
Yeah, he was training all of the stormtroopers, and then they yeeted him out of there. And he's, I guess, presumably has been with Rex the whole time.
And we don't know how Wolf got out from under it, but it has been about 12, 14 years in the intervening. The clones have accelerated aging.
Mm-hmm.
I'd imagine that with how emaciated and physically damaged Echo was, he's probably dead.
You think so?
I don't think that he could survive being more machine than man with the accelerated aging with all these things. Or in Bad Batch season three, we'll see him, you know, do something heroic or something.
I feel pretty sure he's coming back. I feel like the Star Wars idea about adding in cybernetic components to your frail meatbag body adds strength rather than detracting from it. So I would say that Echo probably has a better chance of still being alive than anybody else.
Interesting.
But that is me being deeply biased and wanting Echo to stick around.
You think he's just like a Echo head on top of like an R2 body now? Just like,
oh my God. Let's return to the original second question that I had before we go back to the first question. Why do you think at some point Rex stopped being a rebel and bought into his retirement plan?
Well, that's a great question. And I want to first address why Ahsoka and Rex haven't been communicating, because we see that at two different phases. We see in Bad Batch that Rex has been part of the getting the soldiers together to do something valuable. And then we see later on in this, in Rebels, that Ahsoka, who had been a farmer in Tales of the Jedi after Order 66, has come back and become a major player in the rebellion. And Rex has retired from the rebellion in the way that you're allowed to do, I guess. So the reason that Rex separated off from his rebellion is either because I think that was a different rebellion. I think that there was probably a different thing going on that the clones had to resolve, and they either won or lost. They either got concessions as per Senator Chuchi's retirement bill, or they didn't and were declared obsolete. And now that's why they're at, and they have like some sort of parole system that they're on where like the Empire is like, you can do whatever you want. If you see any rebel activity, you must call us, and in exchange, we won't kill you. And maybe that's why Wolf called in. So I think that Rex fought a war and lost.
But what was the war against?
I think he fought a war to get rights for the clones, to get freedom for the clones, to get their chips removed, to get some sort of rehabilitation for them. And I think he lost.
Yeah, when you watch the Rebels Recon background footage on this episode, it was Pablo Hidalgo who said that the clones represent an entire lost generation of decorated veterans who have been discarded by the galaxy.
Yeah.
So if Pablo Hidalgo is saying it, he is the canon ninja, then it's true.
Yeah.
They didn't get any pensions. They didn't get any benefits. They didn't get to rest on their laurels. And I guess the other component is that Ahsoka has been trying to reach Rex for years, but Wolf has been hiding the messages.
He has been. And we know that each of these characters, the clones and Ahsoka, had to go through a long period of learning of de-traumatizing themselves from being in this war, this deeply traumatizing war. I mean, Gregor had a crazy time of it, but Rex particularly had such a moment at the end of season six with the...
The death of Fives.
The death of Fives, and how, like, Rex was sitting there, and he's with Anakin Skywalker, the greatest Jedi, as he calls him in this episode. Oh. And he's one... I mean, he says... I fought with Ahsoka Tano from the Battle of Christophsis to the Siege of Mandalore.
Stop! And any friend of hers is a friend of mine.
Yeah. And so he had this career that deeply empowered him, and then he was unable to, and then it turns out that he is one of like 10 people in the galaxy who knows how fake it all was. And he's not like a megamind, and he's not like a Mother Talzin or a Kenobi or someone who can someone who can actually do something about it. He's just an old soldier.
And so he saw all of his brothers die for a fake war.
And so I think he knows he's still got fight in him, because him and Wolf and Gregor are like, charge that tank. We're going to tackle it. We're going to shoot it. We're going to bust out knives. We're going to go down fighting, because that's what we do. We know we're going to die today. And they still have fight in them. I don't think they have anything to fight for anymore, because they are a lost generation. They think that if there's no good in the galaxy for people like them.
I love that we're talking about this, because one of the major themes that I picked up on for this episode, this is not the major theme, but the secondary theme that I noticed was, what does it really take to leave your old life behind? Mm-hmm. And I think we see that in so many ways. We see it in the fact that Gregor is wearing the burger spot shirt from when he was washing dishes on Abafar, and Rex automatically calling any Jedi general and sir.
There's a funny moment when Gregor does that. He's like, he turns to Kahn. He's like, right you are, general. And Kahn's like, I was never a general in the wars. Like, oh, sorry, commander.
Yeah, it was so cute. And just the fact that they are still all crack shots.
Oh, God, yeah.
And they are horrifying menaces in their 80s. And they keep pushing back. They're like, we can't do this anymore. We're not fit for fighting. We fought our war, and now we're done with all of that. Mm-hmm. And then, like, it turns out they're not.
No, they still...
They're still great at this.
Like, as soon as someone is like, are you sure you don't want to fight? Like, we actually do really want to fight.
Well, and Rex says, we are soldiers. This is what we were born to do. And it's so interesting how all episode they're trying to say one thing, which is that we're not fighters anymore. But their actions and their words are also saying, yeah, we're still soldiers.
There are so many beautiful callbacks to some of the best moments in the Clone Wars, and that is one of them. This is what we were born to do. That's what Meeber Gascon says about Gregor. That is what the clones say in ambush in the pilot. Like, wow. These clones have always been like, look, I put it all on the line every single day, and they're ready to do it. It's fantastic.
I'm going to make a spicy claim. I don't think anyone should watch Rebels unless they have seen all 122 episodes of The Clone Wars, because Rebels is a love letter to The Clone Wars.
It absolutely is. And one of the fun things is that Rebels came out before Clone Wars Season 7 did.
Oof.
And before Bad Batch. So we're backfilling a lot of the information about what happened with Rex. But when this came out, all we knew was that Ahsoka had been kicked out of the Jedi Order, and we didn't see her again until Rebels. And we hadn't seen Rex after season six. And we didn't know if he was there with Vader killing younglings on the steps of the Jedi Temple or what.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Ahsoka, I think the theme of what does it take to really leave your old life behind applies to Ahsoka too. Because she's done this whole shedding of the Jedi cloak, and she doesn't call herself a Jedi, doesn't think of herself as a Jedi. but she can't shake all of the old memories of her life. She doesn't go with the specters in this episode because she wants to figure out what's going on with Anakin.
Yeah, which, to be clear, is also a good utilization of resources. You know, she's like,
oh, yeah.
Like,
if you're sending Ahsoka, you don't need the five specters.
And like, if it's some sort of like, you need to go to an ancient Sith temple to unearth like the forecasted prophecies of the Sith Chosen One and determine how to defeat them. Do you send Zeb? Like, come on. You send Ahsoka.
The other theme that I noticed was obviously the bigger meta theme, which is about betrayal and what it takes to relearn trust.
Yeah, there's a betrayal in this episode that Wolf does, but the whole tenor of the whole thing is already betrayal, because we start off and it's like very Old West, you know, it's like, I'll never work with anyone from the Hill Country. Yeah. Or Lord of the Rings, like fight beside a dwarf, stand beside an elf. Like it's very much that, because they've got beef and they know it. And Kanan knows it. Kanan's master was shot down by clones in front of him.
And then they tried to kill him too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so I guess the relationship between the clones and the Jedi was strained in a way that I wasn't expecting. I was expecting the Jedi, not Ezra, but Kanan, who was alive during the Clone Wars, I was expecting him to be wigged out by the clones because he's got this deep muscle memory and deep formative knowledge of how the clones did a terrible, terrible thing. But I wasn't expecting the clones to be so suspicious of the Jedi back.
Yeah, it makes you wonder. Because Order 66 did presumably go off at least partially in all of their heads, like how much that changed their minds without overwhelming them.
But what Wolf says is it's Jedi out for revenge.
Yeah.
What Jedi do you know besides Anakin Skywalker who would purposefully go looking for revenge?
Well, think upon this. At the end of the Clone Wars, during Order 66, a whole bunch of clones turned on Jedi and then turned on Padawans, because the Padawans are the less serious threat in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
The clones killed a whole bunch of Jedi, and I'll bet a bunch of Padawans survived and escaped, and then went on long, dark journeys of the soul and might have killed clones in retribution, might have fallen to some semblance of the dark side. Maybe being a clone is something which is dangerous because there are dark side
half-trained Jedi
out there who are like out for revenge, who have these big long lists because they're like, my entire life was destroyed by clones.
It keeps coming up for me that half-trained Jedi like Kanan are, I mean, I know we can't expect to hold them to the moral standards of full-fledged Jedi because they never finished their training, but they do seem kind of dangerous. I mean, Kanan, throughout both of these episodes, is on such a hair trigger.
Yeah.
This whole season so far, he's been on a hair trigger. He's been upset about joining the Rebels. He's been angry about the clones. He's been full of resentment and bitterness and grief. So he definitely did not graduate from Jedi equanimity class before he was on the run because of Order 66. But he's a Force user and he has a lightsaber.
Yeah.
And having all of these half Jedi running around is what the Jedi Order was trying not to do.
And the Jedi Order failed.
It did, but now you've got these very chaotic, powerful elements running around.
Classic Imperial propaganda. This is why you have to turn in at Force users if you see them. No, I mean that you're not wrong. I think that there is an element here of, is a true Jedi someone who completely gives themselves over to the Force, or is it someone who connects with the Force and lives a sentient life?
I don't know. I don't know if I can answer that.
I don't know if I can answer it. I can point out that there are Jedi who lived in the Force deeply who are dead. And there are Jedi who are functionally married with kids who are alive.
Right. Right. But the Jedi that we're seeing who are still around are Qui-Gon through his Force ghost, because mm-hmm. he's so fully inhabited the Force and the light side that he was able to transcend death, and Obi-Wan Kenobi, who fought through his battle of the soul and came back to the Force mm-hmm. and is now a powerful light side Force user.
We also see in this time frame, canonically, Cal Kestis of the Jedi Fallen Order and Jedi Survivor games, and Kanan and Ezra.
Yeah. So I guess they're kind of all over the map.
They are. And, you know, it's kind of a meme that a lot of Jedi survived Order 66. It makes perfect sense to me that, like, it would have been decades of work to kill a lot of people who put it ground.
And there were 10,000 of them.
Yeah.
That's a lot of Jedi to kill.
Especially because, like, if you kill half of them in the opening minute and the other half are like, I need to bounce, then they're gone. And they're superheroes. You know, they have superpowers. So over the past 12, 15 years, tracking them down and killing them have made only the strongest survive. And what we're left with is that wide spectrum of Jedi. And that doesn't mean, I mean, this is what happens at the very intro scene of Rebels. A new generation of children of the Force is arising. Because you can kill an entire generation of Jedi. You can kill an entire generation of clones. And that doesn't remove, like, that the survivors are going to be stronger and they're going to pass their lessons on.
And new Jedi will spontaneously arise, just like Ezra.
Just like Ezra. So I think that the idea we have of what a good Jedi is brought to us by the way we are watching Star Wars. We are watching it from the Republic era. We are relics of the Republic.
Yeah.
People who started with the original trilogy have a very different view of what a Jedi is, because the concept of what a Jedi is very different after Order 66. And it was very different before Phantom Menace.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you think that perhaps I, as an in-universe chronology watcher, am going to have different thoughts about future Jedi than original trilogy fans would?
I think that there is a disconnect on people who are original trilogy purists who are going to be thinking about how come they changed Jedi and not why did Jedi change.
Ooh, okay. That's cool.
And the idea of Jedi changing, we are seeing now, because this moment, which I cried like a baby over when the Phantom comes back, Sabine is flying, they open the door, Kanan and Ezra and Zeb all Goomba stomp on top of this AT-AT. Rex is like, just like the old days.
Oh.
Zeb holds them together while Ezra and Kanan lightsaber open the thing. They lift up the door. Zeb jumps in and yeets people out. And they're like, yeah, that is what being a Jedi is all about. It's about going places and solving problems. But Rex is saying, just like the old days, because what a Jedi is to him is a hero, is someone who rights wrongs, who shows up, who saves the day, who takes impossible situations and makes them possible.
And someone who keeps him, Rex, safe.
Because Rex is an absolutely fantastic soldier. For what that's worth.
He's an incredible captain. We're seeing him calling the shots both episodes. But it's almost like the Jedi are a shield and a sword.
Yeah. And so I've been suffering a bit from depression lately. Just kind of like seasonal and not having a job and what have you. There's no sunlight. There's just nothing. And so I rewatched Ambush.
The first episode of the Clone Wars.
Yeah, and, you know, being an OG King Katunko head, King Katunko says, I've heard that a Jedi is worth 100 battle droids. And it turns out, and then at the end of the episode, he's like, no, one Jedi is worth 1,000 battle droids. And I think that that's really not the point, because the point of that episode is that Yoda and Thyre and a few other clone troopers, Yoda is empowering the clone troopers. Mm. And that's what a Jedi is really all about. It's not that the Jedi is doing things. It's the idea of a Jedi.
Ooh.
It's the idea of a rebellion.
Ooh.
That idea is what the Jedi represent. And that's what brings Rex back from his fishing expedition with his crazy brothers into being a warlord again.
A warlord.
I mean, that's what you hire someone like Rex to be. You're like, hey, we got like 3 blockade runners and 10 remaining A-wings and some rebel cells. We got some stuff to move around. And your old friend Ahsoka. And it's like, okay, so you need me to what exactly? Like, recruit a bunch of people, train them, give them a bunch of explosives and go blow stuff up? And they're like, yeah, sure, whatever. Sounds great. Whatever you want to do.
It is so fun how Ahsoka talks up his resume so hard. And they're like, well, if he's as good as you say he is, then I guess we can't not bring him in.
Yeah.
And then Rex is that hire that you make when you're like, I don't even know what needs to be done. I need you to tell me what needs to be done, and then I need you to do it.
Yeah.
And Rex is like, yeah, bet.
Yeah.
Hashtag can do.
If it is at all possible, I will make it happen. And then maybe that is why Rex also retired from his fight, is because without having fought alongside Jedi and then without Jedi, just being a stormtrooper, just running down populations, just putting down border skirmishes, which is what clones and stormtroopers were doing in the early days, he's like, this isn't it. This isn't what I was born to do. But getting a highly valuable piece of information out of 1,000,000-to-1 odds, fighting an impossible fight, that is what he was born to do. That's what Gregor was born to do. That's what Wolf was born to do.
Yeah. We cannot finish the episode without talking about Gregor's personality.
Oh, it's fantastic.
So, okay. Gregor, I have had hard eyes for since the D-Squad arc.
Yeah, he's great. He's a normal clone in D-Squad.
No. He is a dishwasher. Yeah. In D-Squad. He was an ARC trooper. He fell out of his ship. He lost his memory. He had crazy amnesia. He was gate-kept, girl-bossed, and gaslit into being a dishwasher who lived in a roach-infested bachelor pad.
So many roaches.
On a horrible desert planet. He had a horrible boss.
Uh-huh.
He was reminded of his birthright by R2-D2 and Meeber Gascon.
Who is a frog person in terms of stature and also looks.
Meeber Gascon actually did one good thing with his miserable life, which is reminding Gregor who he was. Gregor nobly sacrifices himself in a fireworks show of rhodium canisters that he blew up so that the D-Squad droids and Meeber Gascon could get off of Abafar and get their important information back to the rebellion. And then we thought Gregor had died. And I cried crocodile tears for 2 weeks about it.
But then,
when Gregor comes back in the Bad Batch, he's nutty.
A little bit.
He is real nutty, Sam. He has undergone a personality transplant.
He's moved in that direction. And one of the fun things about it is that, like, so when we see him in Bad Batch, he is a defecting TK trainer. So he's been training stormtroopers, but he has been, like, part of the Empire. And he's like, you know what? I want out. Come rescue me. And so they come rescue him.
No, yeah, I love that. I think that's great. It's just they keep describing him as shell-shocked. And they're like, yeah, and then his personality got wacky.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but he was so – he had the stoic heroic thing going on in D-Squad. He was so dreamy.
And then he got literally blown to pieces in a Rhydonium explosion. And when they put him back together and he kept fighting and kept fighting and he kept training and he got weirder and weirder. And then Order 66 came along and his brain was scrambled.
Now he's like the Mad Hatter.
Yeah.
But I miss old Gregor.
Old Gregor was just a clone, you know? No, like he was a heroic one. But think about all the great clones we've met who are in the post Order 66 era who have a darkness about them. I'm reminded continuously of Mayday.
Ooh, from Bad Batch.
From Bad Batch. But we meet so many clones in Bad Batch. We meet Cody in Bad Batch. And they're sitting there and they're like, this is not the way it used to be. It's not as good now. Like, it was easy when we were just good and evil. And now we are fighting this war that's no longer in, like, fun newsreels. Now it's, like, the dark, gritty post-war vibe.
They're not making action figures of us anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, in his own way, Gregor had to deal with that. But I don't think, I'm pretty sure Gregor has undergone significant brain damage. Because he's got, I mean, he's Wrecker, he's Zeb, he's very directed in the things he's working on. But the things he offers, I mean, he's not dumb. He's just, his critical thinking has moved in a different direction towards, like, what's valuable and what's not. He's like, ah, the adults are talking. Let's go fishing.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess on this show, we love a himbo. But Gregor didn't used to be a himbo, so it's hard for me to put him in a different category.
Yeah. Yeah. Now he's gotten fun. He's gotten danger fun.
He doesn't even seem to believe in type 2 fun. It is all type 1 fun.
He lives in the moment.
He does. Mm-hmm. He looks at Zeb and sizes him up, and he's like, oh, man, we are going to sling some freaking jupas today, my friend.
Because he's actually now fully retired, right?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. He's like, you can call me back to war. I'm going to continue fishing.
He has been totally liberated from his old life, except when it comes to his hair trigger reflexes and his strategic brain.
Yeah, I mean, still got it.
Yeah. Still got it. Oh, man. Do you want to talk about who else still got it?
Who else still got it?
This is my way of transitioning us to Baywatch.
It's time for Still Got It Watch.
It's time for Still Got It Watch.
Well, I think in honor of it being Still Got It Watch, it's got to be Rex.
Captain Rex.
He's still got it.
He's still got it. Ugh. Boy, does he still got it.
He's still wearing his armor. There's a great scene when Ezra comes into the ATTE and he picks up a helmet and it's Rex's 501st helmet.
With the tally marks on the side.
The tally marks, and it's got the Montal art. It's got everything. Or it's the, that's actually Siege of Mandalore art. He's got art out the wazoo for looking super cool. And Ezra picks up, he's like, whoa, look at this thing. And Rex is like, don't touch that. And Ezra's like, what? Because I'll knock the dust off? But importantly, throughout this whole episode, Rex is turning to Ezra and saying, you know, when you use the big gun, use this hand for elevation and this hand for rotation, and the trigger's right here. Because Rex is like, I know how to work with Padawans.
Oh.
I'm used to a Jedi, Anakin, showing up and being like, I have an outrageous plan. I'm bringing, like, ARC troopers and Rex and a Padawan. And so then Rex is sitting here and he's like, a Jedi shows up and there's a Padawan, there's a Mandalorian, and Zeb, whatever Zeb is, basically ARC troopers. We're good to go.
I know how to do this.
This is just like the Citadel ARC.
Oh.
This is just like every single outrageous, harebrained scheme I went on with Anakin. It's just like the old days. And he's so ready for that. And he's pushing everyone because he knows, he's learned what buttons need to be pushed on people. He's like, Zeb knows what to do. Sabine, you're doing great. Continue doing great. Here's a problem for you to solve. And she's like, hooray. Ezra, he's like, you're a Padawan. This is the safety manual. Please read it. Don't blow us up. Explosives are in the corner. You do what you do best. Just go cause a ruckus. And then he's like, Kanan, I need to put you in a situation where you can level up because you put me in situations where I can level up. The only way we're going to get through this is together. And I think that's going to be really cool. I think it's going to be interesting. But this connection between Kanan and Rex is no longer one of like a clone captain and a Jedi general, but it is something of that shape, but it has the potential to evolve into something more. Mm. And I think that's just critical for Rex, and I think he deserves more character development. So here we go.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah. Rex is proof that you can try to leave your old life behind, but your life won't leave you.
Yeah.
He's coming back and he's doing all the right stuff. He's doing what he was trained to do. He's just good at this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, I love thinking about him treating Padawans.
Yeah, yeah.
Now his Padawan baby's all grown up and her name is Fulcrum.
And she is actually running the show, which in a way is like a natural evolution for a clone if you got to live this long. If the clone army had existed and worked well with the Republic, with the Jedi for generations, then someone like Rex would have been watching as Anakin hands over the reins of the 501st to Ahsoka, to Ahsoka's Padawan. And he's there the whole time as the clone captain, as the clone commander in charge of all these things.
Oh, he's such a grandpa.
He's the kind of grandpa who sticks around and does things, and he knows his stuff. And he doesn't forget it, and he's still sharp as a tack.
So I almost picked Rex for an entirely different reason. It's because of the little wind chimes that they put up on their house.
Aww.
I just, like, what a marshmallow. What a softy. As soon as I saw the wind chimes on their AT-TE or whatever it's called, their Howl's Moving Castle house, I was like, someone came out here one evening when they had stopped for the night, and like, it was probably Rex, and he put his boots up on the railing and was like, you know what we need are some freaking wind chimes for ambiance, and hung them up and would go out there with a mug of tea and sit there and enjoy retirement and listening to the wind chimes.
I think they all would have enjoyed that.
Oh, yeah. But I'm pretty sure it was Rex who did it.
Yeah.
But I did not pick Rex. I picked Ezra.
Good choice.
Because Kanan is in the belly of the tank guiding them through the sandstorm. And he's like, we have one shot. We have one opportunity. Mm-hmm. Ezra, go take it. And then Ezra takes it.
That level of faith is so critical. And it's great because that this whole episode, like, Sabine's there, Gregor's there, Wolf's there. It is a story about Rex, Kanan, and Ezra. And as they're talking, Kanan and Rex immediately twig onto the plan. They've done this before. And Kanan does take charge.
Yeah, but also I was thinking about how in the Clone Wars, a lot of times the full-fledged Jedi Knight is calling the shots, but is asking his Padawan to do the absolutely critical work.
Yeah.
And time again, we see Padawans rising to the occasion and doing what no one else can do. And Ezra really inhabited that Ahsoka Padawan spirit. Remember in the Mon Calamari arc when Ahsoka ends a civil war?
Yeah.
It was like that.
Yeah.
It was like... You think about yourself as a 14 or 15-year-old, and you're like, there's no way I could do that. But people ask Padawans to do that, and the Padawans do it.
I think that that may be the secret sauce for Jedi, is that you're asking 14-year-olds to do and have responsibility for and have the authority to do everything that they are emotionally and mentally capable of doing.
And then you push that boundary, so they're capable of more and more and more.
Yeah, as opposed to being like, I'm sorry, you're 14, you can't actually do anything. You know, you're what, an eighth grader, a freshman? You actually have no power in the world. But if you're a Padawan, you are capable of changing lives, and you are asked to do so.
Mm-hmm. We really saw Ezra level up this episode, and we saw him be the emotional heart and make Kanan turn the Phantom around and go back and save these three wounded warriors. And I think Ezra inhabited the best of potential and the best of empathy.
Yeah.
He was so good.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's got a lot of growth to do, which I think is really important for his arc as a Jedi to be someone who needs to rehabilitate his relationship with clones. And he needs to do that by facing them. Because I'm sure that this is the first time that he's been in contact with clones in 15 years.
Yeah. And the beautiful thing is that he doesn't have any prejudices. He's the new generation.
Ezra doesn't have those prejudices. And that's like the freedom that this continuance carries with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sam, what are we watching next week?
Next week, we're watching Rebels Season 2, Episodes 5 and 6, Always Two There Are, and Brothers of the Broken Horn.
Brothers of the Broken Horn?
Mm-hmm.
Like Savage? Like the Oppressed Brothers?
Well, Savage is like super dead, so.
I'm repeating, like Savage? Like and, Maul?
Yeah. For what episode of the podcast is this? 128, 129?
Yeah.
Have I spoiled things for you?
No, never, but like...
Do you want me to spoil things for you now?
Yes.
Okay.
If Savage is coming back, then someone has to tell me.
Savage is coming back and he's killing everyone.
I'm going to lose my mind. My big hunky baby. Well, I guess you'll find out with me next week if Savage indeed is coming back to steal me away forever. I love him so much. In the meantime, you should follow us on social media. We are on Instagram, Facebook, Threads, and, you know, sometimes Twitter.
It's just sometimes Twitter because sometimes it's called Twitter.
I always have to do an eye roll when I say Twitter. But yeah, we're there. More importantly, we are also on Patreon. And if you would like bonus audio content, then you should become one of our monthly members. Memberships start at just $3 a month. We are currently going through Vision Season 1 and having a heck of a good time.
Yeah.
We laugh. We swear. We make jokes.
And it's perfect right now because more than anything else we've ever talked about, Visions is your childhood version of Star Wars. If you watched Star Wars twice a year as a 7-year-old, this is your version of Star Wars is what is going on in Visions.
It is utterly delightful.
Yeah, join us there. It's been super fun. We're really excited to do Visions and we're coming up on season 2.
We're about halfway through Visions season 1. Also, it is super helpful for our discoverability if you will rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what we're doing, you should drop us a review because that also helps to get us in the earbuds of more people.
And send this episode to your grandpa.
Yeah, especially your wacky one.
Yeah, yeah. Great uncles, grandpas, all the, everyone who's still got it.
Everyone inhabiting wacky uncle energy should listen to this episode. And we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Bye-bye.